Hi, so I'm reading a book called Magicians by Lev Grossman. Book one, Brooklyn. Quentin did a magic trick. Nobody noticed. They picked their way along the cold, uneven sidewalk together, James, Julia, and Quentin. James and Julia held hands. That's how things were now. The sidewalk wasn't quite wide enough, so Quentin trailed after them, like a sulky kid. He would rather have been alone with Julia, or at least alone, period, but you couldn't have everything. Or at least the available evidence pointed overwhelmingly to that conclusion. Okay, James said over his shoulder. Q, let's talk strategy. James seemed to have sixth sense for when Quentin was starting to feel sorry for himself. Quentin's interview was in 7 minutes. James was right after him. Nice, firm handshake. Lots of eye contact. Then, when he's feeling comfortable, you hit him with a chair and I'll break his password and email Princeton. Just be yourself, Q, Julia said. Her dark hair was pulled back in a wavy bunch. Somehow it made it worse that she was always so nice to him. How is that different from what I said? Quentin did a magic trick again. It was really smart trick. Basic one-hand slide with a nickel. He did it in his coat pocket where nobody could see. He did it again. Then he did it backward. I have one guess for his password, Jen said. Password. It was kind of incredible how long this had been going on, Quentin thought. They were only 17, but he felt like he'd known James and Julia forever. The school seems in Brooklyn sorted out gifted ones and showed them together, then separated the ridiculously brilliant ones from the merely gifted ones and showed them together. And as a result, they've been bumping into each other in the same speaking contest and regional Latin exams and tiny specially covered ultra advanced math classes since elementary school. They're nerdiest of the nerds. By now, their senior year, Quentin knew James and Julia better than he knew anybody else in the world, not excluding his parents, and they knew him. Everybody knew that everybody else was going to say before they said it. Everybody who was going to sleep with anybody else had already done it. Julia, pale, freckled, the dreamy Julia, who played the oboe and knew even more physics than he did, was never going to sleep with Quentin. Quentin was thin and tall, though habitually hunched his shoulder in a way attempt to brace himself against whatever blow was coming from the heavens and which would logically hit the tall people first. His shoulder-length hair was freezing in clumps. He could have stuck around to dry it after gym, especially with his interview today, but for some reason, maybe he was in a self-sabotaging mood, he didn't. The low gray sky threatened snow. It seems to Quentin like the world was offering his special little tableau of misery just for him. Crows perched on power lines, stepped in dog shit, wind-blown trash, the corpses of innumerable weight of cliffs being desecrated in innumerable ways by innumerable vehicles and pedestrians. Go, I'm full, James said. I ate too much. Why do I always eat too much? Because you're greedy pig, Julia said Bradley. Because you're tired of being able to see your feet. Because you're trying to make sure your stomach touch your penis. James put his hands back behind his head, his fingers in his wavy chestnut hair, his camel cashmere coat wide open to the November cold, and belched mildly. Cold never bothered him. Quentin felt cold all the time, like he was trapped in his own private individual winter. James sang to the tune Somewhere Between Good King and Bingo. In olden times there was a boy, young and strong and bravo. He wore a sword and rode a horse, and his name was Devo. God, stop! Julia shrieked. James had written this song 5 years ago for the middle school talent show skit. He still liked to sing it, and now they all knew it by heart. Julia shot him, still singing, into a garbage can. And when that didn't work, she snatched off his watch cap and started beating him over the head with it. My hair, my beautiful interview hair, King James Quentin thought. Leroux Samus. I hate to break up the party, he said, but we got like 2 minutes. Oh dear, the Duchess, we shall be quite late. I should be happy, just Quentin thought. I'm young and alive and healthy. I have good friends. I have 2 reasonably intact parents, Dad, an editor of medical textbook, and Mom, commercial illustrator with ambitions, thwarted of being a painter. I am a solid member of a middle class. My GPA is a number higher than most people ever realize it's possible for GPA to be. But walking along Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn, in his black overcoat and his gray interview suit, Quentin knew he wasn't happy. Why not? He had painstakingly assembled all the ingredients of happiness. He had performed all the necessary rituals, spoken the words, lit the candles, made the sacrifices. But happiness, like a disobedient spirit, refused to come. He didn't think what else to do. He couldn't think what else to do. He followed James and Julia past bodegas, laundromats, hipster boutiques, cell phone stores lined with neon piping, past the bar where all people were already drinking at 3:45 in the afternoon, past the brown brick veterans of foreign wars hall with plastic furniture on the sidewalk in front of it. All of it just confirmed his belief that his real life, the life he shouldn't be living, had been misled through some clerical error by the cosmic bureaucracy. This couldn't be it. It had been diverted somewhere else, to somebody else. And he's been issued this shitty substitute for life instead. Maybe his real life would turn up in Princeton. He did a trick with a nickel in his pocket again. Are you playing with your wang, Quentin? James asked. Quentin blushed. I'm not playing with my wang. Nothing to be ashamed of, James clapped him on the shoulder. Clears the mind. The wind beat through the thin material of Quentin's interview suit, but he refused to button his overcoat. He let the cold blow through it. It didn't matter. He wasn't really there anyway. He was in Fillory. Christopher Plover, Fillory, and further in a series of 5 novels published in England in 1930s. They described the adventures of 5 Chatwin's children in the magical land which they discovered while on holiday in the countryside with their glamorous, eccentric aunt. They weren't really on holiday, of course. Their father is up to his hips in mud and blood, and their mother was being hospitalized with mysterious illness that is probably psychological in nature, which is why they've been hastily packed off to the country for safekeeping. But all that unhappiness takes place far in the background. In foreground, every summer, for 3 years, the children live their various boarding schools and return to Cornwall. And each time they do, they find their way into secret world of Fillory, where they have adventures and explore magical lands and defend the gentle creatures who live there against their various forces that menace them. The strangest and more persistent in those enemies is a veiled figure known as only as Watcher Woman. Oh, fuck.